I'm calling the regular meeting to order. If you can take your seats, please. All right, I'm turning this over to Dr. Paramo.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Madam President, we do have a special presentation of the colors this evening to honor National Military Month. I would like the audience to rise for the colors presented by the Wasilla High School Air Force JROTC members Andy Wade, Jessica Gonzalez, Lena Brecklin, and Tad Seeds. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Order. Arms. Right shoulder. Arms. Color's turn.
Thank you to the Wasilla High JROTC Air Force. So we're calling this meeting to order. Do we have a quorum?
Yes, Madam President. We have a quorum with all board members present except for Mr. Cordero, who is excused and absent.
All right. Who has the board goals today? Mr. Cheesham.
Vision. Matsu Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Mission. Matsu Borough School District prepares students for success. Beliefs. We believe that all students can and want to learn. Students, success breeds success. The needs and best interests of students drive all decisions. Stakeholders' participation is crucial to student success. Core values are stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, collaboration, commitment. Goals. We will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on their career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. And we will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff.
I move to approve the agenda.
Make a motion, we approve the agenda.
Okay, so it sounds like it's been seconded by Member Lacey. So it's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection? All right, so the agenda moves ahead as noted. The next item on our agenda is for persons to be heard on non-agenda items. This is the time where you have to voice your thoughts on non-agenda items. Later, if it is an agenda item, you'll have a chance before that particular agenda item. So, Madam Clerk, can you read the rules?
That the speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for the public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-age children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. We have a maximum of 1 hour per meeting in there. This is our first half hour and no one has signed up on the list to be heard.
Is there anyone who would like to be heard on non-agenda items here before we start the meeting? All right, seeing none, we will move right ahead. Our next thing is administrative reports. Dr. Perlmel.
Thank you, Madam President. As I mentioned earlier, this month is the month of the military child. We do have special guests with us here today for a presentation. Once again, April is the month of the military child. This special celebration is a legacy of former Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger and was established to underscore the important role children play in the armed forces community. According to military K-12 partners, today there are more than 1.8 million military children. And since 2001, approximately 2 million children have experienced deployment of a parent. Care of military children sustains our fighting force and strengthens the health, security, and safety of our nation's families and communities. I'd like to welcome here this evening our military liaison from JBEAR, Mr. Don Cole. We do have a presentation as well from a young military child from Farmer Junior Middle School, Miss Jillian. Would they please come forward?
My name is Jillian Gao, and I am 13 years old. I have three sisters, Jenna, Joelle, and Jordan, who are 8, 6, and 4. My mom is a stay-at-home mom who homeschools Jenna due to her learning disabilities. I was born in North Dakota into a military household, ultimately making me a military child. We have moved to several different states, including Texas, Minnesota, Virginia, Georgia, and Alaska. A few of these states we have been to more than once. My dad is in the U.S. Army. He has been serving for 24 years and has been deployed 4 times and has been gone 6 separate times for trainings that lasted for 1 month or longer. He is not my only family member who has served for our country. My dad's father served for 22 years, was part of the Vietnam War, and was awarded a Purple Heart. My grandfather on my mother's side served for 4 years and was also part of the Vietnam War. And lastly, my Aunt Christine served for 4 years and was in Desert Storm. Military service runs in my family, all the way down to my sisters and I. Just because we are not enlisted does not mean we don't serve too. I'll be honest, life as a military child is hard. It's always a struggle, even when dad is home. There is constant stress placed on us. We have adult responsibilities that force us to be more mature than we should be. We are way different from kids our age, not physically, but mentally. We go through more than other kids ever have. We worry about the little things, things most kids would shrug off. We don't like it when things slip through the cracks. We try to be perfect, not for ourselves, but for the people around us. We try to be the rock people can depend on. For people to depend on me, I need to put my feelings aside, put my loved ones before myself. I put on a brave face so they don't have to. I could be feeling like I'm about to break inside, but outside I'm smiling and saying everything will be all right. As the oldest, I'm expected to be strong so that my sisters don't get scared. I can be as scared as all of them, but I can't show it. It may, after a few year-long deployments, it becomes second nature to hide my feelings. It may seem cruel and unfair, but it is an unspoken rule for military children. A lot of kids might take for granted having their parent at home safe and sound, while we military kids are at home and wonder if our parent is alive and safe or being shot at or bombed. We don't have the luxury of knowing that our parent is going to be home for dinner. We just don't. My dad has been gone for 6.5 years of my life. That's 2,373 dinners he's missed. I see my friends together with both their parents home, and I am jealous. I think they are lucky and blessed, but they don't know it. They assume that their parent is going to be there when they get home from school. They don't think about the future. Unlike me, who is at home cooking dinner, wondering how many more days till my father is home and when I can be a kid again instead of the second parent. There are good things that come out of being a military kid. Being born into a military household made me who I am today. Without the steady military presence in my life, I wouldn't be able to stand here in front of you. The military raised me to be strong and fair, loyal and kind. It raised me to be me. And for that, I want to thank the military and every single one of its soldiers, past, present, and future, for risking their lives for our freedom and liberty.
Thank you. At this time, excellent. Jillian, if you can remain standing, and anyone in the audience who is also a military child or maybe serves in the military or has a family member in the military, let's stand.
All right, so next on our agenda is borough and city reports, and I'm looking out and I don't see our borough or city reports, anybody here to give those tonight, so we will skip over that section. The next one is the superintendent update and student advisory board representative, so we're gonna call on Ms. Kendra McPhail to give her report first.
There has been no meeting since early February, which was held at Palmer Junior Middle School, and our next meeting will be here at Central Office on April 24th, starting at 9 a.m.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you, Ms. McPhail. We're gonna do our updates, of course, on the budget and bond project. I'd just like to start by letting you know, as Mr. Fulp, our Chief Business Officer, gets up his PowerPoint, that on the 9th and 23rd, the Matsuboro School District will work with the borough and present our budget. It will be a general cursory overview on the 9th at the joint meeting here, and then again on the 23rd will be the full board meeting to discuss the district's budget. As we've said before and shared, that current revenue has the Matsuboro School District falling about 45 FTEs short of what we have this year. We had to make some assumptions in making this budget and following the ordinance to have it to the borough prior to the state defining their contribution as well as our borough. So we have faith, there's bills out there that can help us. We're looking for some relief also, perhaps with insurance. Our premiums do come out, and we're just hoping for a good one, not too expensive. But I just wanted to share that we will present that in a different manner, not so technical, but just so that it'll be understood. It is already on our website, and we really encourage our community to take a look and review this so that everything is transparent about what the school district is doing and how those funds are allocated. This week, just in general, I just want to let you know that we have finished day two of the standards-based assessment, which is the state assessment. Children are working away in our classrooms from grades 3 through 10. What we say is showing what they know, and it's they just get a chance to show everybody else how smart they are on these assessments. Parents might notice that it's taking a little longer than usual this year, as the state has placed in the tests sample questions. They're field testing sample questions on a new test that's going to come out in 2 years. Some kids have come home and said, wow, it's a lot harder than last year. It's quite different. But a lot of those samples are just test questions, and our kids are answering extra questions to be able to present that statewide test called Smarter Balance in 2 years. Of course, our state did adopt new standards, a new assessment, and new evaluation system that are all tied together, which will roll out to students and teachers. Matsu feels prepared to do this. Our teachers are beginning to be trained. We have quite a few teachers on the state committees that created these assessments, so we're feeling confident, but it is just going to take time, and the poor children have to take extra tests. But they'll be finished the last test tomorrow, and just some grade levels will take a science test on Friday. And finally, today we did present on our Palmer Schools at the Palmer Chamber of Commerce. So without further ado, I'd like to provide you with the budget update. And you'll see that this format is a bit different, and we're hoping to get it up there for the audience to also view in simplest form.
Thank you, Dr. Promo, President Pauser, and members of the school board. For the listening audience, my name is Luke Fulp. I'm the chief business official. Tonight, what we're hopeful, just want to provide an update. There's no action on the budget to be taken tonight, but it is an update. Wanted to let everyone know that it can be accessed on the website as Dr. Promo mentioned, both the presentation tonight as well as the preliminary budget as a complete document is available on the website as well. In addition to that, we have printed off preliminary budgets for all school board members so that you have a hard copy to reference whenever we go through specific numbers. Being that not everyone has the time or to look through the budget and analyze all the schedules of revenues and expenses, what we wanted to provide was a different format to look at where we are today and how did we get there. So we just highlighted some of the contributing factors on the first slide here to show the general fund operating budget and how we got to a $5.9 million deficit, projected deficit, as we've referenced throughout the budget process thus far. And I just broke it down into some of the major components. Again, as you look at the detail in the budget book, you'll find other smaller factors that contributed to the overall $5.9 million. This is really a summary, but provides context for how did we get to a deficit in the current year or for the projected FY14 year. So the first thing is that there's reduced state revenue from this year to next. And the reduced state revenue comes, the majority of it comes from the foundation formula, and it's based on our conservative estimate for intensive student counts. And as we've mentioned in prior meetings, we've projected that to be 90% of the total students that we claimed in the current year. Again, we don't have a final determination from the Department of Education and Early Development. We're told that that will come out sometime later this month as to all the students that we claimed in the current year. So they're still undergoing a review of the students that we've submitted for funding in the current year. And because of this additional scrutiny that the state provides for our counts in this area and the evaluations, we've been conservative in looking ahead to FY14 as to that number. So that is a difference with not a large difference in total enrollment being projected. That will be represented as a decrease of total revenue of $3.6 million from this current year to FY14. In addition, we have built in as an assumption that the borough will fund us at a 3% increase over the current year. That 3% increase represents $1.5 million, takes us from around $48, $49 million to $51.2 million in total local funding, and we can see a $1.5 million increase. Of course, if the borough does not fund at 3% increase over the current year, we will have to reduce that number, and it will have an impact to the total deficit we're projecting. Again, we are projecting that we will have more fund balance at fiscal year end, June 30th, 2013. That is when fund balance is measured within our accounting statements. And last year, as you'll recall, we had roughly $1.7 million of unassigned fund balance available for spending. We're projecting that we'll have at least $2.4 million of unassigned available for spending after the lapse, and so that will be available for FY14. And overall, we have a difference of about $300,000 in revenue from one year to the next, and so that's referenced there as well. On the expense side of the budget, regular movement within the salary schedule accounts for all employee groups as they move through the salary schedules assigned to their employee group. We costed that out, and it's at roughly $2.3 million increase over FY13. In addition to that, we've projected a 12% increase to health insurance rates, given the 50-50 split that's within the contractual language that governs the employee groups. We have $1.9 million increase for health insurance. And then other employee benefits that are tied to salaries as a percentage will increase as salaries increase. And we're estimating that those mandatory benefits will increase by about $500,000. And then lastly, the last item that we're all very well aware of is the transfer to other funds. Currently, pupil transportation has a $1.5 million transfer out of the general fund to the pupil transportation fund to provide a balanced budget within that fund, and that's a $1.5 million transfer. In total, the expenses will increase roughly at $6.2 million, offset with the $300,000 increase, and we're looking at the $5.9 million deficit that we referenced earlier. So that is another way to look at the budgeting picture and our reality as that we're facing as a district. getting to a balanced budget, which we, which the board adopted March 20th and has been delivered to the borough, we had to make adjustments to have our revenues equal our expenses for FY14 in that projection. So what we did here at the district, the staff and administration, along with the budgeting and finance staff, we did really scrub the numbers and looked at the very fine detail behind the budget, including every single employee within the budget, every single discretionary line item, over 11,000 accounting codes, and we, without overextending ourselves, realized a savings in doing so that we think we could recapture within this projection. In addition to that, the lion's share of the savings came in an increase to the class size ratio by one student for every teacher, and so the reduction of 45 FTE district-wide really made up the difference in the deficit and got us to a balanced budget. So again, this is just review for the audience and the public. That changes our adjusted ratios and metrics as referenced on slide 4 to one increase per pupil for every teacher, and that's represented in this slide. Do we have a question?
Yes, Mr. Cheesham.
Oh yes, going back to the 45 FTE, that's best case scenario if we get a 1.5 million increase from the borough assembly. If we don't get that, do we have, what does that do? Are we talking about other higher reduction in full-time employees, or are we going to get that somewhere else, or do we know? Do we have a plan B?
Dr. Paramo?
Yes. On the first page, there were quite a few assumptions, and so if the borough doesn't fund that 1.5, it may be made up in some other bills that are in the legislature right now. We can share those. That's our next slide. There's a slide for E-rate. There's a bill for transportation. So we're looking in transportation for a new bill that is soon to be voted on by April 15th to make up $500,000. In the past, with our budgeting system, we would say that $1.5 million is 15 teachers because we would estimate. But because we do the new system of drilling down, we go down to every employee, and that's why in the past 5.9 would be about 60 teachers. It's only 45 teachers or staff, rather, administrators, 45 FTE. Our goal is to retain all employees, and this is really a preliminary budget because we could also look the health insurance rate increase. We really looked at the national mean. Next week we will know what the health increase is. We have it in our budget as 12%, which would mean 6% for the district, which is that 1.9, but we could make up funds there to retain more teachers. So as in essence, the majority, and you'll see about 77 to 78% of our budget does go right into instruction in schools. And so that is the place that we would have to adjust. And that's why you see FTE.
Okay. So we need that 1.5 million though.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Yeah.
Member Larson.
Thank you. Going back to the reduced state revenue, you said that's 90% of an intensive need students. When will that count be totally confirmed of exactly how many and how much revenue will be coming in for those?
Through the chair, Member Larson, in the current year, we're told that our total count or number of intensive students that we reported to the state will be confirmed this month. There's still 14 that are being reviewed because of just different factors within that category. And so it's a very long process and long and drawn out process. So it really takes, the count is done in October, and then there's several months in which we have to wait until we receive a final determination from the Department of Education and Early Development. We're told, however, that it will conclude in April.
And that count, we go off of that count for next year's funding, is that correct?
Through the chair, that is for the current year's funding. So we still don't know how much we will effectively receive from the state in the current year. Although it's a marginal amount, we still don't have a final number. And that will be, so for FY14, we're talking about April 2014.
So why the 3.6 decrease? Are we going to lose that many intensives kids? Or is it just a 90% estimate on the kids that we have now? Is that how we're doing it?
I'll defer to Dr. Promo.
Thank you. This was essentially, if students don't show up, then we wouldn't have that revenue. And without a fund balance, we can't make an error. Because if we have contracts in 1 year for teachers and the students don't show up, then we don't have those. And so we are needing the 14 students this year that we put in our budget this year to come through to actually actualize all the monies in FY13 this year. And so we have a 10%, barrier to see if those students will show up. Once we start to receive enrollment and have those IEPs, then we can be assured mostly that we can have them. But again, we'll start the year with more teachers, but it won't be confirmed. We're still not confirmed for this year in regard to our funding, in regard to intensive students. We don't have a fund balance to make an error for next year because our fund balance is being used to balance our budget.
Just one last follow-up then. Is the state going to do something about that kind of count, that it can be done in a more expedient manner, because we're going all the way into May before we absolutely know what our budget is this year? I mean,
through the chair, most school districts do not experience this as their fund balance. They're allowed to retain a fund balance to be able to plan and have some leeway if their estimates are off in children. Our budget is based on a count that we provided by November 5th of last year. 2012, we provided EED a number for which we believe we'll have students next year. That's almost a year in advance that we're saying, and that's because our budget is generated from students without a savings account to be, if you make an error or misjudge or people move out of state or out of town or don't go to our schools, we can't make that error and have a balanced budget. We would not be solvent if those kids did not show up.
So it boils down to no revenue, no savings account, no...
Yes, sir. We cannot afford to make an error.
Thank you.
Moving on, adjusted ratios and metrics as found within the preliminary budget and as referenced on slide 4 just represent an increase to every single class size ratio that we have. Broken down, we have K through 2, grades 3 through 5, grades middle grades 6 through 8, and then high school level 9 through 12. Those are all referenced above, and these are all the classroom, regular ed classroom teachers.
I'll comment on these a little bit. If you can look at 2011 and 2012, those ratios are similar to what we may face next year. Just to direct this to Mr. Cheesham, on that year, Mr. Cheesham, we did not receive an increase from the borough. We had requested that, but we did not receive. We requested a 1.5% increase, and we didn't receive it. So last year, in preparing for this year's budget, which is 2012-2013, we did receive from the borough when we asked that 3%, and I believe that just the transparency of budgets and working with them, that they did provide, and you see that it went down this year. Without the support and without the numbers coming in, I would say also for this year, the NEA trust insurance was phenomenal. It had a 0% increase that really assisted us. It was a tremendous help. And that's why we hold out for this year. But, you know, that's a business that covers health insurance that's related to real costs. So we just can't always bank on that. But last year, that was significant, and that addressed those teachers. And please know that the metrics are an overlay of basically an equitability model for our schools, so that our schools and our different communities can expect equitability. It's also set for scalability, because of course our teachers would follow where students attend school. You will know that some schools this year have a reduction in staff. That's partially due to an increase in the PTR, which is the parent or pupil to teacher ratio, rather, of 30-1, moving 31-1. Additionally, some schools are experiencing loss of teachers and a gain of teachers because of student enrollment. We have a couple of elementary schools that actually are receiving teachers because their enrollment is growing. We have other schools whom are losing teachers and they're moving to a different school because they follow the students. Where the students enroll is where our pool of staffing goes. But I want to remind everybody at this time, the goal, and the board has said it loud and clear, it was in the survey, the goal is retain our classroom instruction and aides and teachers first, and that's what we've planned to do. This FTE is out there, but again, you'll see on the next slide that there's several bills out there that could assist us, but the calendar year, if you will, or the calendar date of having to give a balanced budget before all the information is known is what makes this difficult and I guess, you know, quite emotional, because we don't like to lose our staff. We don't even like to talk about it. But at this time, there has not been a layoff, not any teachers. No teachers were received a RIF or a reduction in force, which is commonly known as the pink slip, because the goal is to retain everyone. Our board at the end of February approved all tenured contracts. That's about 900 teachers. And there's about 300 teachers who are non-tenured, who are out there that until the last day of school, we have work to do to be able to retain our staff here in the Mat-Su Borough.
Okay. Thank you. Getting to those legislative items that Dr. Promo mentioned, we just wanted to provide a brief legislative update. Dr. Promo and I have been taking an active role in the session, tracking bills, participating in conference calls with other superintendents, and working to understand where different bills are headed, which ones have legs, and which ones are experiencing movement within either chamber. Currently, the one that seems to be moving the quickest through either chamber is Senate Bill, committee substitute for Senate Bill 57, is pupil transportation. It's been referred out of Senate Finance to the Rules Committee yesterday, and it's would provide approximately $500,000 in relief to our budget, and that is largely based on the projection that we had at the time for CPI, which is 2.6%. So we built in a factor of expenses increasing based on that 2.6%, which, as you can see in the chart above, is the average of the last 5 years. We have since learned that the FY12 CPI increase is 2.2%. The current language within the bill references that it will match Anchorage CPIU. And the reason why that is such an important index measurement is because every single pupil transportation contract, or the vast majority of them, reference the Anchorage CPIU as the only inflationary factor within the state that's measured by the U.S. Department of Labor and Statistics. It's for all urban consumers in Anchorage, and as a statistics that's measured by the U.S. Department of Labor and Statistics, the contractors that provide pupil transportation in the state, the major one being First Student, references it in all of their contracts that they have with different school districts. Ours is no exception to that. So currently, the language that increases pupil transportation funding from 1 year to the next was enacted in last session under Senate Bill 182. That provided for 1.5% increase in fiscal year 14 and 15. This bill aims to change that so that it matches Anchorage CPIU. So the difference in the CPI versus the 1.5% increase was causing us to provide additional funding to pupil transportation. We hope to see some relief through committee substitute for Senate Bill 57. And again, that has been referred to the Rules Committee. Senate Bill 82, and again, the bills that I'm highlighting tonight are the ones that have a fiscal impact and potentially could help our budget picture. They're not all of the education funding bills that have been introduced this session. They're just the ones that we see as having a impact to our budget and changing the budget picture. But Senate Bill 82 was introduced and is currently in Senate Education. It has had one hearing to date, and it is providing a local share for E-rate and telecommunications, E-rate services for both telecommunications and internet. And the E-rate program is a program that's administered by the federal, by the FCC, and for schools and libraries throughout the country. We receive federal revenue through this program to help support our telecommunications and internet services. And the Senate Bill 82 aims to complete the cost of these services and provide that local share, which would mean approximately $350,000 that the district would recover in terms of state funding to help support these services. The last item that we're hearing, which was proposed in the governor's budget, and we've spoke about this at length, is the one-to-one initiative. There are several. This is simply an estimation as to what it would look like if it was distributed by average daily membership. There has been a proposal by the Alaska Association of School Boards to facilitate a program in which there could be a one-to-one initiative. School districts would apply for funding with their projects through the $4 million that was appropriated within the governor's budget, and then AASB would be responsible for awarding grants, and districts would be required to provide a 40% matching. The other idea that's been batted around to some extent is that this technology money of $4 million just be provided to school districts in terms of their average daily membership, so that school districts have that flexibility to meet their own technology needs within their respective school districts, being that not everyone's needs are the same. Not everyone needs digital devices. Some school districts are in more need of increasing bandwidth and providing that infrastructure, wireless infrastructure and whatnot, so that is there as well. If we broke it down to a by ADM, we would roughly see about $500,000. And so that is just a best case scenario with that money. Overall, that roughly, if you add up those values, we have about $1.3 million that could possibly see. That would be, at this point, a best case scenario from state funding. That would help us in the current year. Lastly, I just want to touch on the 70-30 rule, which is 70% of a general fund costs must be directed to instruction within school districts. So we just wanted to provide this because last time I provided this, I provided it without on behalf payment as calculated within this formula. However, the state, in when they measure this, they measure it with on behalf. And as referenced earlier, we are closer to 80% of all general fund dollars being directed towards the classroom and towards students within our budget, which is not the norm. There are, last year, I know the number was approximately 19 districts that had to request waivers by the State Department of the State Board of Education because they could not meet the 70% threshold and could not direct 70% of their expenditures to instruction. Mat-Su School District is doing very well in this area, and that we can through our budget model and the current infrastructure that we have in place provide plenty of funding directed towards instruction at 77.8%.
And in those categories, Madam President, instruction would be schools and those folks tied to the classroom, school administrators, district office administrators, custodians, food service workers would be in that instructional support. So basically, teachers and aides are in instruction, and supervisors and things like that, as well as those other categories I mentioned, would be in instructional support. Just to give you an idea of whom those positions
are. Are principals in instruction support, or are they in instruction?
They're in instructional support. Principals are considered support because they don't directly teach children.
there any questions?
Member Larson?
Except for the principal that's also a teacher, right? Teacher principals.
Those FTE for those positions are labeled 50-50. If they are funded 50% of the classroom, they can only be listed in instruction 50-50.
Going back to slide 5, if you would, please. The SB 82, is that going to be an ongoing program, federal and state, or is that just a one-time shot? I know, you know, the transportation funding was a one-time shot, but now it seems to be an ongoing program. Would we look at this as just a one-time money this time, or is it going to be possibly there as an ongoing a revenue source?
Through the chair, that bill, Senate Bill 82, extends beyond FY14, so it would be ongoing.
So it looks like it will, if it passes and it goes through, we can possibly depend on this money from year to year.
For the immediate future, it will not be built into the foundation formula, but I believe the bill accommodates at least 3 years.
The technology money is just one time, I assume.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Additionally, Madam President, we do have a bond project update. There was information presented on all the bond projects in the Mat-Su Borough that was provided the board. We are prepared to answer questions. Mr. Bob Bechtel from the borough is here. If there's anything specifically you would like to address.
Do we have any questions on the bond project updates? No? Member Larson.
I discussed it with before the board meeting, so I had quite a discussion and got my answers, so I won't bore you with those questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Larson. Member Welton.
Was more information available concerning the water issues at Valley Pathways?
I'm requesting Mr. Bob Bechtel to report on this. He is a project manager for the Mat-Su Borough School District that is our liaison on all of our projects.
Through Madam President, School Board Member Weldon, no, there is no more information, although I know long-term-wise, Mr. Culver is going to seek to make sure that does happen eventually, but we do not want to delay the construction of the project at this point. We want to have it built and meet our schedule that we have set up now. Right now we have 10 projects that are in design out of the school bond projects, which is pretty impressive, I think. 9 of those will happen this summer or begin to happen this summer, including the 4 athletic fields. And then the only one that will not begin this summer will be the Kinnick Area Middle School, High School. So we don't want to delay the project, but long-term wise, we will be connecting to the city eventually, yes. Good question, thank you.
Member Larson.
Yeah, just one quick question on the athletic field. I noticed on your bond update, and I do appreciate this update that you put out, it talked about lighting, you know, the field, the track, the lighting, and the bleachers. What exactly does the bleachers talk about? Not only does it talk about the home bleachers, but the visitors' bleachers? I mean, what does that entail?
Well, through the president, Member Larson, they'll be heated on the home side. The visitors will be non-heated. No. And padded on the home side.
I guess the reason I bring that up is because I've been out there and I've had major complaints about visitors' bleachers. Yeah. Deteriorating pretty bad. Well,
the plan is we have pretty tight budgets on all those athletic fields, and we actually list a lot of alternates, which is sometimes not fair to the contractors bidding on that. So we try to put in the things that are required as the base bid, and then everything outside of that we list as an alternate. And as we can afford it, we will make the best with the money that we have. In addition to that, there are things we cannot do. For example, we can't build anything with four sides of four walls. We can't build structures and add square footage to the facility as such, because of Department of Education won't allow us to do that. So in other words, we can't build impressive press boxes that have four walls. We can't do that. But we can build, within reason, bleachers, all the other facilities. Actually, that's your question sounds like a good Ken Forrest question, actually, to me. Does that help, though? Well, we'll do the best we can with the money we have, but we do have pretty tight budgets there.
Well, I look forward to seeing that those fields go in. I really do.
And we have an excellent project manager, Jeff Walden. He's on those, and he's real hard-nosed with the contractor. He'll get the best we can with the money we have. And we work real hard with Dave Anderton's crew there, and it's an excellent work in progress there. We have a monthly meeting with all the facilities folks over at the O&M shop, and that's where the rubber meets the road, I think.
Thank you.
Anything? All right. Seeing no more questions. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Bechtold. All right. So, are we finished? Okay. So we're moving on to the consent agenda.
I move the consent agenda, the minutes of March 20th, 2013. Item B, 13-076, rehire retired teachers. Item C, 13-081, permission to accept and expend a grant, CHS.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, that passes. Our next item is action items.
Can we take five, please?
Oh, yes. Mr. Larson, we'll take, let's take a 10-minute. We'll take a 10-minute break. We'll come back at 7:05. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I have someone move the first action item, please?
I'd like to move 13-077, reemployment of central office administrators.
Second.
The item has been moved and seconded. Is there anyone from the audience who would like to make comment on this? All right. Do we have an administrative report?
Thank you, Madam President. The names that you'll see on this reemployment of central office administrators are the names of the folks in this building that direct different departments. Some of them are certified educators, and then the others are directors that are non-certified. They have certifications in business items, but not teacher and educational certifications. And so just in following in line of moving forward, contracts that we know, the ones that we know that we can afford, we are doing these. So some of these folks would be tenured teachers as well as directors.
Okay, is there any discussion from the board on these items? All right, seeing no discussion, is there any objection to passing this action item? Seeing no objection, that item passes. Okay, the next one is item B. Can I have someone move that?
I'd like to move 13-078, Executive Director of Instruction.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Do we have a administrative report?
Yes, thank you, Madam President. The new director, if approved, is present today, but I wanted to share that I did receive some questions, and they were warranted, actually. In a time when we just showed some reductions, possible reductions in our budget, some might ask, well, why are we having a director approved for another position? The instruction department has reorganized to address some of the issues with the new curriculum, the new assessment, and the new evaluation system. We really need to carry some of that weight and take that off of buildings and principals and teachers to be able to implement those items more effectively and appropriately. What instruction has done is Carl Schleich was a part-time in this position. He's retired but leaving us. We had our MAP coordinator retired and leaving us. The MAP assessment is now what they call enterprise. You don't have to hit every computer. One person can do it from a off-site area to be able to upload those assessments. In addition, we had another TOSA for EdTech. Similar situation. As more and more companies move to enterprise system, we're able to save on staffing and really address where the needs are, which at this particular time is in that curriculum and instruction area. And so I wanted to provide that information so that if there were questions, and certainly Mr. Gene Stone can also answer those and review that with folks. There isn't an additional expense, if you will, that wasn't already supported through grants and other operational monies. So with that being said, I would like to introduce to the board, upon approval, the new Executive Director of Instruction, Ms. Monica Goyette. Monica has been a counselor in our district at Colony Middle School and Thielen Middle School, as well as a middle school teacher. Most recently, she is the principal of Shaw Elementary School, and also most recently, she is defending her dissertation soon in as an expert in curriculum and instruction. So it's a much-needed asset here, and we welcome her to our to the district office, and the principals were thrilled to have that support and knowledge in elementary as well.
All right, is there any public comment on this action item? Seeing none, is there any board comment? Member Larson.
Through the chair, to Dr. Promo. So most of the finances behind this position are from the two part-time positions. Is that correct? Is that what I'm hearing you?
More specifically, I asked Ms. Gardner to list them. It's a 0.49 executive director position and 0.75 from it's an instructional technology support. Two people filled that 0.75, one at 0.5 and one at 0.25.
Just to follow up, because that question was asked me prior to get my board packet because of the concern of adding, what you said, adding positions, but most of the finances is taken up by these other positions. So we're not adding new, we're combining two to create this position. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that is correct.
All right, are there any other comments? And is there any objection to passing this executive director of instruction?
Yes, Madam President,
I'd like to call for a vote.
All right. So we will vote. A yes vote would mean you agree or approve the executive director of instruction. Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Cheesham.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Rutherford.
Yes.
Member Lacey.
No.
I vote yes. That passes with one member in abstention. Member Lacey. Can I have someone introduce item C?
I'd like to move 13-082, school years 2013-2014 and 2014-2015 calendar revisions.
Second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there anybody from the public who would like to comment? Come on up.
Good evening. My name is Joe Boyle. I'm president of the Mat-Su Education Association. And I'm coming here tonight to ask you to please delay consideration of this agenda item. The calendar changes and workdays are very serious items for teachers. I try to visit schools as often as I can, and I see teachers all over the district working their hearts out. They put in long days and nights. They're working on weekends and holidays. They work over the summer. In the last few years, district policies have resulted in larger class sizes in the elementary schools and more courses and increased student numbers in the high school. At the last board meeting and at this board meeting, it was announced that 35 more teaching positions would be eliminated and class sizes would be increased again. As a result, each year, there's substantially less time for students to interact directly with their teachers and for teachers to prepare the quality lessons they want to deliver. And even though most teachers work over the summer to prepare for students, final class rosters are rarely completed before teachers report at the beginning of the year. So those two work days at the beginning of the year represent the only days that teachers can work collaboratively with each other, prepare for the individual needs of students, and complete the necessary clerical and paperwork duties that everybody loves. Because teachers have those two work days, they can feel more confident that the students will have a quality experience from the first bell of the first day. You may have noticed I haven't discussed the other proposed calendar changes, converting two professional development days to actual instructional time. Teachers like to teach. That's what they want to be doing. When the district converted PD days to instructional days in the past, including this year, we received no negative feedback. I was not surprised that teachers want to be in the classroom teaching. In closing, the work days at the beginning of the year provide just a little more time for preparations. Teachers use both of those days because they want every student to receive a quality public education from the first bell to the last. I would ask the board to please consider delaying this motion until you have more time to hear from teachers and community members about the importance of these work days. Thank you very much.
Is there any other member of the public who would like to speak on this matter? All right, Dr. Prommel.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to share just some background in addition to what is in the packet. I have some calendars over the last 3 years to share with you. I had received a few calls from teachers thinking that two workdays were being removed from the beginning of next year. In fact, we will remain with 4 days prior to school being started to work. It's just that one of those days would be a workday, and the other would also be a professional development day. The second workday is really in the calendar year that follows, doing the same thing. So there's not two workdays at the beginning of the year. But I want to give you a little history. As Mr. Boyle suggested, creating the calendar is really, administration creates it, but with feedback, and I think when you were a community member, we had one of our board members sit on there. So there's lots of different folks represented to pay attention to how we create our calendar. The number of days we have is in statute, and the comment that was just made in regard to adding two additional days is absolutely correct. When we saw a loss of some days with moving students around with our newest schedule, it was actually a teacher group recommendation to turn some professional development days back into student contact days. The state mandates 170 days for students to have school. We will now have, this current year, we have 172 for high school and 170 for elementary. That request is being made because the parents said, we'd like to have school too, teachers, but we need to be on the same schedule. And so that is correct. Teachers work tremendously at the beginning of the year to prepare for their classroom, as well as was mentioned on their lesson plans. Within our negotiated agreement, 225 minutes is provided for that during the week. This particular change is being made. If you take it on the year 2010-2011, the teachers that spoke at that calendar meeting said, we just need more days to work. So this is just 3 years ago, prior to the school year, because there's so many things to learn. You do go over your schedules, new staff needs to be oriented and the like, as well as, of course, setting up a classroom. Teacher contracts are for 185 days, and that is depicted on our calendar. So there are 15 non-contract days or non-student contact days this year for elementary and 13 for high school. Just 2 years ago, we heard those recommendations and moved forward with offering 4 days prior to the school year starting. And last year was the first year that this occurred. In 2011 and 2012, we had a workday, PD day, PD day, workday. Remember, if you see the prior year, we just had a PD day, PD day, workday. And so we added another day beforehand. This current year did the same thing. We had a workday, PD day, PD day, workday. What's come to mind is that sometimes teachers need to meet together in a group at a school, and the workdays are so defined that it's days with no other duties. And so to add the flexibility for teachers to work in their classrooms and to possibly have a meeting on the day before school, we would like that to be changed to a professional development day. Earlier in the year, we did work with the schools that needed to make that flexibility, and most schools and principals and staff probably flex most of those days. Some days they, this is especially true in elementary with open houses. They like to have the work day on the open house day, which doesn't always match the calendar. So for years, flexibility has always been built in between the principals and the teachers within each building. This year we just ran into some problems with it, and we want to honor the contract and honor what a real work day is. And for that reason, we would like to retain 4 days of preparation prior to the school year, with one of those being a work day and three of them being professional development days, where the principals set the schedules for teachers working in rooms, teachers meeting together, and teachers receiving professional development. And that's the history. It's I kind of feel as it's no good deed goes unpunished, because 3 years ago this change was made for teachers, and we just experienced some difficulties in being able to really operate with the functions of the school. So we would still allow and request to allow 4 days prior to school
and principals have been notified to use those days to, you know, really prepare for school, which includes some of those things I mentioned. And to also have a work day where it's just a day in your room to be able to unpack and hang up things and rearrange and just kind of get your wherewithal coming back from a summer break. And if you have any questions, I can certainly answer, but I received several calls today, but again, they were thought that this meant that the two work days this next year before school year would be changed into PD days, and it was just one of those. So there would we would retain a work day such as we had had for years.
Member Welton?
Just what would the problem be in delaying this to another to the next meeting? What kind of issues would come about if we were to delay this?
Through the chair, there would not be a problem other than, you know, being on another agenda. But there isn't a rush. We usually adjust our calendars. The biggest thing is communicating with your community of graduation dates and school calendars when they come back. But those items aren't changing for your community. That's why you want to have a calendar done. But students wouldn't be on those days anyway.
Mr. Larson?
What would be accomplished if we delayed it? What would, between the 2 weeks, what would we receive be any different than the decision today? Well, I'll just ask that question first.
I think, Mr. Larson, the only thing that would be different would be we'd have a little bit more time for public comment. However, this agenda has been out for a while. We, of course, can take more public comment and explain that a little bit better for teachers so they don't panic that they're not going to have any work days before school starts. Member Rutherford?
I want to clarify, this change is to allow the principals some flexibility because, as I understand it, on what's designated a work day, they are technically not allowed to request anything, to mandate a meeting or anything at all. That true?
Through the chair, that is true. And then you can kind of picture the problem that the day before school, what that would cause. Most staffs, and we haven't had problems like this. This calendar has been like this and similar. You know, I showed you one from 2 years ago, has been the same. It's just recently come up as an issue. And particularly, the school didn't necessarily really see a problem with the flexibility, but we were asked to please honor the contract. And in being able to honor the contract, a five-minute meeting is not appropriate. A two-hour meeting is not appropriate. Asking teachers to do any additional duties by the contract statements of what a workday is inappropriate. And so we need to honor that.
Member Lacey?
Yes, first of all, I'd like to say that I'd like to hear more public input on this. But secondly, I was a teacher in this district, and I've been personally affected by work days that were turned into something else. I go back to years ago, a work day had a treasure hunt for our staff. Now, this was a colossal waste of time, money, resources, and my time to give to my program. So I would like to hear more public input, and I'd like these to stay in the schedule. Thank you.
Member Welton.
I would like to move to postpone this item to the next meeting.
I'll second it.
And we will be in Trapper Creek, sorry. just to let you know.
All right, so it's been moved and seconded. Member Rutherford.
do these days have to be designated in whole days? Are we allowed to designate a half and half day?
Through the president, technically they would be. In actuality, what happens is that sometimes the work day, when a staff votes on it, is spread out all over the week. And so really, they are building decisions, and they've allowed the buildings, previously we've just allowed the buildings to decide on voting. It's just that we were asked not to do that anymore, to not be able to call a meeting. And so we're just trying to fix that so that we can address the needs of students on those days.
Okay, so an amendment has been moved and seconded. Member Lacey seconded. Member Larson.
Is there any discussion on the amendment?
That's what we're doing right now. Member Larson, go ahead.
We're not voting on it? Okay. If we go with this amendment to delay this, what I'd like to see is... Again, this is on the website, I assume. This is out, and just explain what a work day is via the contract, that the contract says that no meetings can be taken place, and spelled out what a work day is under contract rules, period. And that's what I assume that we're going to do and put out, that the first day is strictly a work day. The other question I have is, we had some flex schedules with some schools that... But that was professional development. That was not work days. Is that correct?
Through the chair, no. We flexed work days and professional development days. The last professional development day, all elementary schools on the professional development day received a half day of professional development, and then they went back to their rooms and worked for half a day on their own and without any meetings. And so it happens often. There hasn't been a problem up until this year with that language.
But so this schedule, when we vote on it, if we vote on it to extend it, or whenever we vote on it, is a flexible schedule. It can come back to the board, or it doesn't even need to come back to the board to have a flexible schedule.
Through the chair, it states in the contract that through mutual agreement that flexible schedules could be made. I would recommend principals don't do it anymore because, it was challenged. And so after the fact, and so I would recommend that that's why this is being made, so that the principals can still give work in the classroom, but be able to, if something happened, to have a meeting. So my recommendation would be to perhaps not flex if... we can't, if it can't work out, if it's causing problems and possible grievances of the contract, we would not want that to happen. We want to honor the contract.
Thank you.
Member Cheatham?
No.
Is there any other discussion before we vote on the amendment? Okay, so a yes vote on this would be to delay a vote until the next meeting. Is that what you proposed, until the next meeting? So
a yes vote would amend the original, and then we would vote on the original.
Yes.
No, no.
It's just, yeah, it's just to postpone. I'm sorry, a postponement. All right, so yes vote would mean, well, you agree to postpone. So Mr. Larson?
Yes.
Mr. Cheatham?
Yes.
Ms. Welton?
Yes.
Ms. Rutherford?
Yes.
Mr. Lacey?
Yes.
I too vote yes. I do feel that it's important people have some time for input on this. However, I do agree with honoring a contract, and we don't want to get ourselves in trouble if we say it's going to be a work day and then we call a meeting and we get in trouble with our contract with our employees. So that passes. We will visit it again next meeting. So let's see. Item D, can someone bring that forward?
I'd like to move 13-083, superintendent contract.
I second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Do we have, we don't have an administrative report. Do we have anyone from the public who would like to speak on this? All right. Go right ahead.
Terry Snyder, how can you pass up an opportunity to speak on the superintendent? I think we should all be very pleased with our superintendent. She's the face of the borough school district, the fastest growing school district in the state. She handles herself, I was at Chamber today, she handles herself well there. She did her favorite part of her job today in passing out awards to kids. And I heartily recommend that you beg her to stay.
All right. So we will now open this to discussion or comments if anybody would like to make a comment from the board. Ms. Rutherford.
I just want to commend the board on how smoothly the discussion went to come to this point, and I'm very happy to be extending this contract.
All right. Any other comments? All right. Member Cheatham.
Well, I wish we were meeting on April Fool's, because I wanted to say I wasn't going to vote for this until Terry spoke, and then she said, but I would have been just kidding. So, yeah.
All right. I would like to make a little comment before we vote on this item. I'm very pleased with the direction our school district is going. We are recognized as the leader in school districts here in the state. We do have wonderful superintendent and administrators and our superintendent. I would just like to say it's really been great leadership these last few years. And with that, we'll go ahead and vote. Well, I don't think we need to have a voice vote. Would you like one, Mr. Lacey? Mr. Lacey would like a voice vote. Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Cheatham.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Rutherford.
Yes.
Member Lacey.
No.
And I vote yes, so this passes with one member in dissension. All right, so let's move on to non-action items. Course approval. Do we have an administrative report on this course approval? Oh, I'm sorry. We don't need an administrative report.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant
the
motion.
Okay.
Madam President, if there are questions, Executive Director Mike Vervelo can comment. It is a MATSU Central course, which did go through the appropriate process through the AAC at the Central School.
Member Cheatham? Okay, it's not an action, so we don't need to move it. But so go ahead with your comments.
Well, just a question. I'm sorry. I need to hear a little bit more about the process. This was a package put up by a company, and we are basically purchasing it now. Was it selected? Sort of competitive bidding, where there's several different packages that you looked at. That's one question. And then did you, and I saw that on there that they have tied it to state standards. Do you see it, the materials adequately challenging students to do advanced level thinking? Is it going all the way up and down the Bloom's taxonomy? And just kind of what sort of questions were asked and answered in the process?
Mr. Vervelo, I'm sorry, before you get started, can you also kind of review how these items come to us from that particular school? Because the items are a little bit different. All right.
All right, I'll start out with the process. MATSU Central for the program of studies, which is where all the curriculum for the entire district goes through, is a little different. It's set aside for Mat-Su Central School, just for the students at Mat-Su Central School. So this course would only be for that one individual school. Normally, it would go through our curriculum council process, and that's what's different about this. All the other courses go through a curriculum council, which then are vetted through a group of teachers that apply to all secondary schools in our district. There's a separate council that we formed about 2 years ago for Mat-Su Central that has teachers, parents, and administrators on it. They vet their own programs through that council. They also, when they do it, they set up a process similar to our curriculum council where they look at teacher experts. And so for a science course like this, it will go to individual science teachers, and they'll go to other core area high schools. They'll take the program that they're interested in, and then the teachers, the science teachers, or if it's math, the content area experts will look at it and make sure it does meet the standards that you're talking about, whether it's Bloom's taxonomy, the Alaska state standards, as well as federal standards. And so they will align those, look at it, make sure it meets the Mat-Su school district's level or benchmark of where they want those kids to be. This particular course is set up for more homeschool kids. So instead of a regular physical science class, this one is actually a more advanced class they were looking at to meet the needs of higher level kids. And it was also very, when they looked at it, very rigorous, but it was also very hands-on and easy for families to use at home is what they really liked about it. So this particular program is more for homeschool kids through Mat-Su Central.
So was this, were there three or four programs that they looked at before they came to this?
They looked at a variety of programs, yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Member Larson.
If a regular ed high school kid took this course, would it be an elective or would it substitute for any of the other courses?
This one would actually substitute for one of our physical science courses.
So it would be a credit?
A science credit.
Science credit.
Yes, it would.
So they can take it independent, possibly, and substitute that. Okay.
Yes, they could.
Okay. And saying one follow-up, and saying so for that, did that have to go through the curriculum board to determine that this actually could substitute for a credit? Or how do you determine that?
No, it does not go through our curriculum council. This one is just for the Mat-Su Central students. Now, if a student signs up through Mat-Su Central School, they can receive credit through this, just like they could go through BYU or other credit options that Mat-Su Central offers. And the thought several years ago when we formed the ACE committee, which is in the curriculum council, so to speak, for the Mat-Su Central School, that was set up so they could actually have a process to vet these programs through it. Before, if you remember, for some of those of you that have been here a while, Mat-Su Central would take, you'd sometimes be approving 50 courses that really hadn't been vetted because you'd be looking at a vendor and just a ton of different elective opportunities. We thought that wasn't good enough for our kids, and so what we did is set up the ACE program where you really have it set up parallel to our current curriculum council where they're trying to really vet them out, make sure they meet the standards and the expectations for our kids. So these are much more looked at, vetted by our own teachers to make sure they do have the rigor that we want.
Yeah, and I guess the question also that I had was, you have this only for Mat-Su Central kids, but a regular ed kid, say at Wasilla, could take it and use it as a credit, substitute credit. How do you determine if this course is good enough to have to be a substitute credit course?
Dr. Promo.
Through the chair, any student, because we do offer that does occur, if they want to apply for other credit options through different means, the principal and the counselor, as well as the parent and the student requesting it, there's actually a form that was in your curriculum books last time, but it's a form that they fill out for approval so that the principal and the counselor can be assured and review that, look at the class, and it just so happens that this class would count for a science class, but there may be others. So those are vetted individually by the counselor and the principal for students who need to make work up, who are enrolled in a comprehensive high school outside of Mat-Su Central.
Yeah. And I saw that last time, and I guess I'm not speaking very clearly. This course is could be used as a substitute credited course. What makes this course a substitute credited course if it's strictly for MATSU? I mean, because it meets the standards of all the other courses in that particular genre?
Yes, sir. And then there are some courses, though, that may not be as rigorous as what we're looking for. There are other MATSU courses that would not. But this particular one has been vetted. What we would take a look at are the outcomes and the assessments. There's quite a few kids actually every year, especially some seniors who need to graduate, get that course. And so, but again, they're looked at individually, and what is considered, you are correct, are the outcomes, do they match what courses are that went through the curriculum council. So we look for a match. We would also consider kids. We look at NCAA. We would not want, we need to communicate that. If there's a course that would not be NCAA approved, it would be approved. Alaska Performance Scholarship, approved or not approved. And so when we give students advice on makeup courses or APEX courses or courses for which are not in our district, we really look at all those aspects of them so that the kid doesn't get caught in the mix.
Member Cheesham?
And just following up, the person who looks at that, or the people who look at that, are not the homeschool ACE, but the Department of Instruction at this in this building, are the people in this building who look at that and make that decision? Or is it the principal and the counselor at the school level?
Through the chair. The principal and the counselor at the school level provide the approval.
Okay.
Okay. Are there any more questions or discussion on this item? Member Lacey?
Yes, to follow up on that, after they've made the decision they want to bring it forward, it goes to the Academic Advisory Council, which meets once a month, which I'm on, and we approve these, which then comes to us. So it's been approved and vetted by two different people, two different sets of people, and that's why it winds up in our lap the third time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that clarification. All right. We are now finished with that discussion item, non-action item, I'm sorry. Moves us down to future items, future business. On April 9th at 6 o'clock, we're going to have a joint borough assembly and school board meeting here in this building. You may remember that Dr. Paramo talked about we're going to do a very brief budget presentation, and then the big budget presentation in depth will be April 23rd. No, I'm sorry. What day is that?
You're correct.
Okay, April 23rd. And that will be at the borough building? No, it will be here also at 6 o'clock. Okay, it is the borough meeting. We will be presenting at that borough meeting the budget in depth and answering questions for that. April 17th is our regular school board meeting, but we will be traveling to Trapper Creek for that meeting. And April 23rd also at 5 o'clock is the school board policy committee meeting. What numbers are we going to be reviewing?
I believe we will be doing the 3000 series and 4000 series, and the administration will bring forth those things that they think need to be revised. Those of us on the committee, if we can peruse some of those and look at if there's anything that we think needs clarification or updating, we can bring that forward at that time. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other future items, future business?
Quick question to the president. Who's going to attend that policy meeting?
The members of the policy.
I mean, are the two regular members going? I'm an alternate on that, and I just want to know if I should go to that.
You'll be there? All right. It looks like both of the members will be there at that meeting. Do you want to have that here? Because the other meeting with the borough assembly is right after.
That would be fine if there's room to have it here. Then we could do that on that Tuesday.
The 23rd.
The 23rd. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
Okay. I will take care of that. Thank you.
Okay, so that will be moved to this building instead. Member Larson?
Yeah, then for 1 hour, that meeting will happen, and then the Borough Assembly meeting at 6 o'clock here?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Does anybody have any other future business they want to bring up? Okay. So we are now down to persons to be heard on non-agenda items. This is the second chance for you to speak before the board if you have any items to discuss or you would like to be heard. Is there any? I'm sorry, we have the same rules as last time, so be nice. If there's anybody in the audience who would like to be heard, now's your chance. No? Okay. So we have nobody, no persons to be heard. We're down to correspondence. Has there been any correspondence or board committee reports to be reported on? Member Welton?
We did have a committee, joint committee meeting on Monday, and we went over the usual information, and that's where the discussion over water for Valley Pathways came up, so there were some issues that will be looked into, but we're going to continue on as far as Mr. Bechtel had said that we would go on with that without stopping that. And there was discussion about the wood-fired boiler and a new agreement that hasn't been signed yet, but it's been presented. And bonds, we went over those, and I think the budget, and there was discussion about, you know, where we would be if funds were available and if they're not available. Is there anything else? I can't remember the other things, and I didn't bring my paper with everything on it.
That we went over some of the legislative
That's true.
Bills.
Okay.
With them.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Any other board committees meet? No? Okay. So we're down to comments from the school board and administration. Dr. Paramo.
Thank you for the approval of my contract. Thanks.
Kendra, do you have comments tonight? All right. So, Member Larson.
Once again, I really appreciate the staff being attentive when questions are asked, especially questions from the Board Connect. I really can't emphasize. I know I mention it every time, but that Board Connect allows us not to have the discussion here at the board meeting and answer all the zillion questions. And I really do appreciate that a lot. We can have, instead of a debate board meeting, we can have a regular board meeting. So keep up the good work on the Board Connect, please.
Member Cheatham.
Well, yes, just continue to be amazed at the quality of work and thought and energy that people in this school district do. And I visited a high school. I went to one classroom in particular. It was just an amazing discussion. He was talking about World War I and trench warfare, and I was looking around, and the students were feeling the same way I did. It was like we were right there and experiencing it without being terrified, but experiencing what it might be like, imagine what it was like, but also looking at higher level questions about, you know, what do you do when you're planning, when you're used to and you're thinking about the world in terms of cavalry, and all of a sudden you're in this new technology that something as simple as barbed wire, and how that changed the warfare and changed the way the experience of people at that point in history, and they were really engaged and learning, and it was an exciting moment. And I just was thrilled to see that. And I just wish, and I was, like I said last time, I wish that more people out there were really honoring this level of teaching and engagement and learning. And so I'm just very pleased to be here.
Member Welton.
Well, I'm not going to reiterate the things I gave you in the memo concerning that's in your reading file concerning my time down in Juneau, but I do want to say that, again, great presentation by Dr. Paramo to the Association of Alaska School Boards concerning our school climate and connectedness surveys and how that all works, and former district administrator and Dr. McCauley gave us a preview of some of the things that were happening with Department of Education and the new standards and how that's going to affect us. I do want to thank you for the celebration tonight. That was great, fantastic. It's so wonderful to celebrate our kids and our staff that have accomplished great things. I want to say something about the new standards as well as the developmental milestones really appear to be used. As someone who spends time in teaching developmental psychology, the issues of when can kids learn, if we don't try to teach kids things, we won't know when they can learn. And so the new ideas of how to teach our students, making sure that they have the basic skills, but also incorporating higher level thinking, is fantastic. And I really applaud the state for looking at a different way to put together the standards and to make them Alaskan standards with the addition of culture. Thank you.
Member Rutherford.
I have a few things, but I'll be quick. First, I was able to attend one of the U.S. Air Force Band's Band of the Pacific Brass Quintet's performance. They performed at a couple of schools to celebrate Music in the Schools Month in March. And I just want to express my appreciation. I did to the military gentleman that was here earlier. He was Army, but I just think that's great that they're allowed to come out to the schools and perform. It obviously inspires the kids. If you watch them, they are inspired. I wouldn't be surprised if that those sorts of things make a difference in those kids deciding to pick up an instrument. I want to commend the district for winning the United Way Pace Setter Award for giving in the campaign this year. I also was at the chamber today and heard Dr. Paramo's presentation. It was very well received. It was highlighting a lot of the great things that we're doing mainly in the Palmer area schools, since it was the Palmer chamber, but it was well done and well received. And finally, I have a third grader, and as engaged as I thought that I was in education and in the effects of No Child Left Behind, I guess until I had a child taking the SBA test and experienced it from that point of view, I still didn't fully get the magnitude of this week of testing, even though I'd been in the schools during testing week, but I was playing with kindergartners. So it is huge, and I appreciate the district communicating with parents ahead of time. I appreciate the line the teachers walk to prepare the students without stressing them out further for these important tests, and I think it's I think it's good that we teach kids to prepare for important tests, I would like to find ways in the future to engage the community even a little bit more in the discussion about, I'm surprised at how many parents don't understand the impact on the school if they pull their, if their kid is not in school this week. I had some very engaged parents plan a vacation for this week because they just didn't understand how important it was. And, you know, once they did, they regretted it, but they were gone on vacation. So we can't take for granted that the public gets it as much as we do. And we may not agree, I think, with the standardized tests. I think most of us don't. But we're not going to get the public to support us wanting changes in that if they don't fully understand the impact as well as we do. So I think the more we can engage the community in that discussion about what these, the impact of these tests and what it takes away from in administering these tests, the curriculum it takes, it the time it takes and the resources it takes, we won't get their help in making these changes, making changes that we need. But difficult week. I can feel it in the air in the schools, but it's handled really well as we can. Thanks.
Member Lacey.
No, Madam President.
All right. I just wanted to say it is a difficult week for students. I have two students, one who doesn't need to take the tests. I didn't realize that once you're past 10th grade, you don't have to take that test anymore. So one who's taking kind of a vacation, and the other one who's working really hard and was a little bit stressed out. I talked with a fourth grader who told me what SBA really stands for. The fourth grader told me that it stands for stupid, boring assessments. I encouraged her to do her best on them, however. I did go to the honors concert at Colony High School and watched many wonderful performances. It was an evening that was very entertaining. We have some great students and great teachers in our music. With that, we will go into executive session. Can I have someone move that?
I'd like to move that we go into executive session, Madam President.
Second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. We're going into executive session. Matters of the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect on the finance of the government unit, subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion, matters which by law, municipal charter, or ordinance are required to be confidential, matters of confidential legal counsel or pending litigation. And our topic tonight will be a negotiations update. With us will be the school board, Dr. Paramo, Jean Stone, Katie Gardner, and Saul Friedman, and Luke Fulp. So we're off to executive session. Sorry.